The Vintage Gamer, Episode 25, Tom Clancy's Politica, Part 2, The Bad Stuff.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. And always, this podcast is available via RSS and direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net. So, welcome to part two of the Politica episode. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about news this week. I did have a moderately good Thanksgiving. I got to see my parents and hang out and eat turkey and do all of that. But I was sick for pretty much the entire time. So I slept a lot and didn't get as much visiting in as I wanted to, and actually ended up playing just one half game of Dungeon Twister during all of National Gaming Week. So didn't quite go as well as I wanted to. I was hoping to actually get in some gameplay with my family. But that's as it is. Things happen that way sometimes. That's about really all I have for news this week. Not a lot going on. Well, there's something going on Saturday. But I don't think I'm going to talk about that until the next show. But until then, we'll have a brief message, and I'll be back with the things that didn't go quite so well with Politica.
From the worlds between the pages of your favorite book, to adventures teetering on the edge of the dice, the pilot's at the helm and our course is set. The dream ship gathers speed across the sea of possibilities. Welcome aboard, the Dragonhearth.
I'm Tracy Hickman.
And I'm Laura Hickman. Each month we explore the limitless expanse of creative fiction and games, from the nuts and bolts of writing and publishing to the worlds of our creation.
Whether you're looking for practical advice on plot, character, and setting, we're in search of new and distant realms of speculative fiction to explore. You'll find a home here, on Dragonhearth.
Join our next voyage through your favorite RSS server or by visiting us at dragonhearthproductions.com. Tracy and Laura Hickman's Dragonhearth, voyages into the realms of imagination.
So now we've gotten through all the good things, let's move on to the mistakes. I think the biggest mistake in the game was how the combat system works. Now, we went through a number of things. The first idea for combat was simply that you would pay money and you would buy dice. And the defender would spend $1 per die, the attacker would spend $2 per die, and you would roll. If you got a 1 or a 2, then that would be a vote for the other player, and 4 through 6 is a vote for you, and 3 is just kind of a lost vote, I guess. As I recall, that system didn't work too well. Basically, it favored the defender too much, so the game, again, was just too static. Nothing really changed all that quickly. Then, after playing around with a few things, I moved to the system that I described before, where both sides roll dice and add them up. And there were some variants on that where the defender could buy dice, or the defender got a certain number of dice, depending on whether they had majority. And eventually it ended up with the defender gets dice for the number of tokens that they have in the particular space. And the attacker can buy as many dice as they want. There are two things that went wrong there. First of all, the reason that the defender can't actually buy dice was because we were trying to keep things moving along. We realized that things were getting a little too slow, so we were just trying to say, look, we'll have the attacker buy, and then the defender will just respond to that with what they have. The problem was then we discovered that the balance moved too far to the attacker. And instead of trying to fix the combat system so that the balance was correct, we corrected that by patching the game. And as many designers will tell you, that is a mistake. And it was definitely a mistake in this case. The patch that was used was the alliances. So you form an alliance with somebody, and then you can use their tokens as your own, both for movement and defense. And what happens is that, again, the game becomes stagnant. Because once you form an alliance with a player, it's very difficult to break it. Suppose it's a four-player game. You form an alliance with another player, then the other two players are definitely going to form an alliance together because it's in their best interest to do so, and then you're stuck. You've got two alliances, and you can't break them, because if you break with your current ally, you're setting yourself up for a defensive disadvantage. The best thing you can do is try to convince one of the other players to ally with you, but why would they do that? They have an alliance. They could try to convince you to break away from the other player, break the alliance, then attack you both and take you both out. So it ends up becoming a two-player game. So it started as a four-player game, becomes a two-player game because you're stuck in these two alliances. What should have really been done is to go back, take another look at the combat system and fix it. But at that point, I'd gone through a number of combat systems and I was like, all right, this one is the one that works the best and so we're going to stick with it. That was a mistake. Another mistake that I think was made in the game was starting off with all of the tokens on the board. The game is a zero-sum game. There are no chances to grow yourself without actually taking somebody else out. What happens in that case is it's kind of like you're in the middle of a game. Like with other games, you expand, and then you get to a point where you're actually in conflict with another player, and then you fight it out, and then there's some sort of endgame. Well, in Politica, you start off with everybody placed on the board, and you play for a while, and positions shuffle around, and the game ends after six turns. I don't think I said that, but that's what happens. The game ends after six turns, and whoever has the most after the six wins the game. So it just kind of feels like you're playing the middle of a game. There isn't a lot of the dynamic excitement that you get. I mean, yeah, in some respect, that's where all the excitement is usually in a game, but you kind of want to have the feeling of you're building a force and then you're using it. And in this case, your force is determined randomly, and then you're using it the best you can. There were some variants where you could sit around, you could place the tokens on the board yourself. I believe the reason we dropped that is because it just kind of took too long, and I hate to say this, it sounds kind of patronizing, but we didn't want players to think about it too much. Placing the tokens yourself might help the game be a little more interesting. I would love to work on changing the game so that it could be played so that you can expand. You know, you could set up a power base for yourself and then expand and then have the conflict. And then actually end the game properly instead of saying, well, it ends after six turns. Just say, look, the game ends when somebody has majority control over the country or has majority control in a certain number of spaces or something like that. I think it'd be a little more interesting. The other problem with ending the game after six rounds is that basically the advantage is given to the player who goes last. So they can always do the final attack and sort of get themselves into the position to win the game at the very, very end. Whereas a game with a non-fixed ending, basically a game where, again, say someone needs to get a majority in 10 spaces. If you have that, then the players can see, this guy has a majority in 9, we better take him out before he wins the game. Gang up on that person, knock them down to, say, a majority in 6, and then worry about the next person who comes up. Now, I know some people don't like games with that kind of dynamic. That's how diplomacy works, so that would be the sort of dynamic I would be looking for in a game like this. Now, note that this is only true for non-simultaneous play. We went with non-simultaneous play because we're trying to aim for this whole idea of a chat game, which I'll get into a little bit later. But if we'd gone with simultaneous play, then I think fixed turns would have worked a little bit better. There are election games that use this process. Basically, you say, again, the game lasts a certain fixed number of turns, and people can spend some time negotiating with each other, figuring out what they're going to do. Then they submit their move simultaneously, and everything is revealed at once and resolved at once, so that there isn't this advantage of the last player gets in that last lick. But again, as I said, we decided to go for a round-robin type play, and so it didn't work in that case. Another problem with the game was the long turns. Each turn can take quite a while. I described all the parts, and there's a number of things that happen in a turn. There's production, there's the movement, there's the trading. Trading can take a while. The challenges can take a while. So each turn can take 5 minutes or so. Well, 5 minutes per turn with eight players means that player number eight has to wait 35 minutes before he or she can do anything on their first turn. And while they probably won't get eliminated, because each person can only do two challenges on their turn, maybe three if you include the nationalists, or is it communists? That's the communists. It's still, that's a long time to wait to actually do something in the game. And that comes to the number of players. Trying to balance a game for 3 to 8 players is really tough. For people working on their first game, that was probably not something we should have taken on. Both of those things were kind of defined by the goal of the computer game, which was to emulate a large group of people having fun around a table, playing a game, and chatting a lot. So we wanted to get a lot of people in there and so they could all hang out and chat. But again, I think we kind of missed the point that, yes, people want to hang around and chat and play a game, but they also want to play the game. So if all you're doing is sitting there and talking and everyone else is having fun playing the game, well, it's not a lot of fun for you. So we missed the boat in that case. My personal thought is this game is really best for 3 to 5 players, and it is at its very best with 3 players, because the alliances don't come into play in that case. And the turns, you know, if it's 5 minutes, then you're only waiting 10 minutes to go. Note that the length of time for the turns really wasn't an issue on the computer, because you could quickly whip through your turns just because all the die rolling and everything was automated for you. So this may have been a case where we should have said, you know, in the computer game, yes, you can play 3 to 8, but in the actual released board game, let's say 3 to 5, 3 to 6, something like that. It's probably worthwhile at this point to make some comments about the components in the game. There were a number of complaints about how poor the components were, in particular the influence tokens. Well, I'm not really sure how that came about. I thought what happened was there was a miscommunication between myself and the person putting the game together, but looking over the documentation that she sent me, it clearly says that the influence tokens are supposed to be a quarter-inch square. It does say that they are supposed to be, I think it's 30-pound weight. In any case, the weight of a paperback book cover, basically. Had I actually known something about how paper is measured, maybe I would have recognized that fact, but I didn't. I just looked for the quarter-inch square part and assumed that they were going to be thick cardboard tokens. In any case, neither of those things were true. It got printed with 1/8 by 4/8 inches tokens, which were completely the wrong shape, and they weren't as thick as I was hoping they would be. Another thing I probably would have done is look into how much wooden cubes were. They would have worked a lot better than the tokens do, being easier to pick up and move around and things like that. I'm not sure if they would have been economical or not, but they certainly would have been better as a component. The other thing that went wrong in that department, or in the component department, was the uprisings. The uprising piece was actually the same piece that we used in the prototype. Again, it would have worked better had the pieces been thicker and larger. But in general, the uprisings were not a well-thought idea in terms of making a game economically. Basically, we would have had to create a custom piece for it. And as this was our first game, we just didn't have the budget for it. Now, I realize there are people out there who are used to the beautiful components that they find in German games, and these days it is easier to find custom components through China and other places, but at the time, it was a relatively expensive process to create a new mold and cast a piece like that. So, if I can summarize, my advice to any aspiring game designer is to keep the components in mind when you're designing the game. I'm sure other people will say, well, you need to design the game and let the components take care of themselves. But you need to keep in mind, in my opinion, that this game has to be manufactured, and it will have costs. And if you make your components too fancy, and the costs are too high, then maybe your game just won't get made. Another thing that people have complained about is the special abilities. In fact, that seems to be the primary complaint, is that the abilities are imbalanced. Well, the deal is that each faction has a special ability, which kind of gives them that different flavor. In the original design for the game, the factions didn't have special abilities, they had special winning conditions. Like the Church had to get at least one seat, as it was called, or one token in all 23 spaces. The Ultranationalists had to get complete control of the six republics. The Separatists had the same goal, so they had these competing goals going on. The Mafia had to get a ton of money. The Centrists and the Communists had to get complete control of 12. Again, they're trying to fight for complete control of a majority. And the Army, at the time it was called the Army, not the military, had to get complete control of 4 armies. So that was the original plan, was to have different winning conditions. I'm guessing that I was influenced by Illuminati, although it had been many years since I'd played Illuminati. I'd only played it once and had some vague memory of it. There may have also been some thought of Cosmic Encounter there too, although Cosmic Encounter really doesn't have different winning conditions, just different special abilities. In any case, that got changed to special abilities. We decided it was cleaner to just say, look, everybody has the same goal, and we'll just have different abilities to differentiate the different factions. We played with a number of different special abilities for these guys, some involving money, some involving the amount of power that you have. I don't know. I think if special abilities in a game are imbalanced, I don't think that makes the game broken. Some people say, you know, they don't like Cosmic Encounter because of, again, all the special abilities. Someone is going to have a greater advantage there. I think it's just something that you take into account. It adds a certain unpredictability to the game. Again, if the Separatists have this really powerful ability, well, then you take that into account and you say, all right, fine, I'm going to try and take you out. At the time the game was designed, the Separatists were causing a lot of trouble in Russia. But it's entirely possible that you could create a different ability for them, like say, all right, the Separatists get to move an uprising for free. Well, that's actually the military's ability. But in any case, maybe this military get to take over uprisings for free. But that is one of the things that's very difficult to tune in a game, just trying to figure out those special abilities. I'm the sort of person who's like, look, if that's not completely tuned perfectly, fine. It's the rest of the game, the core of the game, that's not tuned quite right. That's where the problems come in, and that's actually why I always get surprised when people say, well, the special abilities are terrible. Like, okay, well, you must have had a really unlucky game then. That's all I gotta say. And the final thing, the final mistake that I think we made is in playtesting. Now, if you go out on Usenet, you'll find somewhere out there a posting from me where someone said, this game wasn't playtested at all. And I say, yes, it was. We playtested it heavily. And both of those things are true. We did playtest it heavily. And given the response at Origins, which was overwhelmingly positive, we pretty much thought we had a hit. We pretty much thought we had done all the playtesting that we needed to do. However, I don't think we playtested it quite the right way. We didn't do blind playtesting. We didn't take the game into a room with rules, sit there, put a gag in our mouths, and a notebook in our hands, and just let people play the game. Usually what would happen is we would come in, people would get confused, they wouldn't know how to play the game, and we would help them. And that's something that we should have tried to fix. Another thing we didn't do is we didn't give it to a group that was well-versed in playtesting. So what we did was often we either played with friends, we played with people in the company, or we took it to Origins and had basically strangers play it. But we didn't get a group of people that we knew was good at taking a game and ripping it to pieces and saying, this is what works, this is what doesn't. We had some people in both the group of friends and the work that did do that, and that did help a lot of the aspects of the game, but we just didn't run it through that process of tuning and saying, look, this doesn't work. If we had done that, I think we would have found the issues with the combat. Maybe we would have balanced the special abilities a little better too. So again, yes, we did a lot of playtesting, but it wasn't the quantity of the playtesting that was the problem, it was the quality. Again, I'm not trying to cast aspersions on anybody here. We didn't know that that's the kind of playtesting you needed to do, and we actually learned from this and changed how we did playtesting for our other games and started doing more blind playtesting. Here's our questionnaire. Give us back the results. So, all in all, what do I take from all of this? Well, I think the process was a good one. I mean, yes, there were times when it was painful. We worked a lot of long hours. And it does hurt a little bit to have people basically say they revile the game. I still don't think the game is irrevocably broken, as some people have said. I think it has some potential. It does need some revisions, and I have had some thoughts through the ages about how to do that. I just haven't sat down and done it and played it through and seen what works and what doesn't. Those ideas have gone through a number of changes depending on what sort of games I've been playing at the time. You know, flavor of the month type stuff. It's like, oh, it's a Euro-style game now. Oh, it's more of a war game again. And so hopefully I'll actually sit down, take the time, and figure out what would make this game better. Probably have to be a completely different game, to be honest, because all the things are tied together. I mean, the production, you know, the amount of money you get sort of controls how much combat you can do. So even if you said, all right, well, now the combat changes, now and then you have to change how the money production works to keep people from either having too much or too little money. Don't know what to say, but I'll think about it. Or maybe by doing this podcast, I can finally get this game out of my head and just design another game instead. We'll see. Sometimes it's good to just move on. Well, that's it for Politica. I hope you've enjoyed that. I hope you found it somewhat informative and not too self-indulgent. I'll be back with some final thoughts right after this.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more...
Game Addict Hotline.
Hey, do you know the name of this game? Well, if you do, you probably should be listening to the Game Addict Hotline at www.gameaddicthotline.com. That's where you can listen to all the latest gaming news for the week, listen to what's coming up next week, and we also have trivia for you from all different consoles. So check us out at www.gameaddicthotline.com. And oh, by the way, this is Double Dragon for the NES. Hope to see you there!
I did get some feedback on the first Politica show. I'm going to wait on presenting feedback on both until next episode, so get them all together into one chunk there. I did get a couple pieces of feedback that said that having no trouble with iTunes, I guess I'm going to assume one of two things, one of which is that FeedBurner is giving me the wrong information, or the other is that, well, my numbers are going down. Well, tough. It seems that a lot of people do like what I'm doing, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, and hopefully the numbers will go back up again. And beyond that, I don't have much else to say on this show. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to do one more. It's not so much a self-indulgent show as it is a company-indulgent show, covering one game that I think deserved a little more attention than it got. And that game actually came out in 99. So, not quite a vintage game, but it is a game that is difficult to find and I think deserved more attention. But that will be coming down the pike later. One thing I'll mention is, if any of this has interested you in the game of Politica, if this episode hasn't turned you off too much, I do have a couple of copies of Politica, if anybody would like them. In fact, I will send them to you. I'll even throw in the shipping if you're in the continental U.S. If you're outside the U.S., well, we can work out something, I suppose. And I've got some other Politica regalia. There's some political stickers with the logo on them, which I think look quite nice. You can use them to decorate your home, if you like. And I've also got some test mini CDs from the Politica paperback, which is a saga that I'm not going to get into on this show. However, if you ever catch me at a convention and want to buy me a drink, I'll be happy to tell you about it then. In any case, if you would like any of those things, or if you just want to send feedback, you can contact me at vintagejim@gmail.com, or you can drop me a Skype message, that's JV Square, or you can drop me an audio by going to audio.com, or you can go to the website where you can find links to all of those things. That address is www.thevintagegamer.net. Comments, feedback, please for me to shut up. All right, maybe not the last. But most of those things are always welcome. And thus concludes yet another self-indulgent episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The Vintage Gamer will return next time with another blast from the past. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.